Welcome into episode 149 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Craig Morgan,
the Natty Hattie,
and Jamie Eisner.
Sup?
And
back to that gimmick.
No leftovers.
No leftovers. He's banished from the show.
I'm Luke Lipinski. Craig's wearing a Life is Good shirt.
It is good.
Oh, you got a big smile on your face. You're happy. The playoffs are, what, we're a couple games away now from getting to the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that. We've got some news and notes we'll hit at the end. We've got some listener questions as well.
We've got some podcast news.
See, now I hate it when I listen to a show and they're like, stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to have huge news for you.
Big announcement.
So we're just going to do it
coming
at the
next week. No.
Yes. So first of all, I don't know. How do you guys want to announce this?
You're the horse of the show. We've established this already.
So we did 149 episodes in this studio. We couldn't quite make it to 150, right?
True. Well, kind of this studio.
The ultimate irony in this
kind
building.
Of, like, it's just on the other side of the wall was the rest of them.
Yes.
Really just the same. So I guess we'll count it.
So we are continuing the podcast.
Yeah, we're not leaving.
Maybe so. I should have phrased that.
Yeah, differently. You started like that's like a goodbye.
We may
have already lost 5 or 6 listeners.
Yeah.
Actually, in that.
Well, it's going to be a different, it's going to be a little bit different. That's all we know. We're migrating it over to Arizona Sports, which if you don't live in Arizona, maybe that means nothing to you. But either way, we have a studio set up there. I think Jamie's going to be on at least some of the shows.
Yes, as many as I can.
Me and Craig will definitely be doing it every week still. It's still going to be basically the same show.
Yeah.
You stay tuned. You can follow us on Twitter the same way and everything, same email, all that. We may have a different iTunes stream. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to set up.
You know what else we'll have? Guests.
We will have guests.
We'll have guests again.
We will not have leftovers. We leftovers.
Yeah. Leftovers is will be what's left over.
Rip Chris Schubert.
And but we're not. The important thing is we're not like breaking up as a show.
No. The band is staying together.
Yes.
We're just replacing the drummer.
And really, if so, he's Ringo. Are you saying he's Ringo?
Because the Ringo's coming star.
So
be John Bonham.
But this
that's a good reference.
Yeah, but I think that's a more positive reference, isn't it?
Well, I've always been positive about
Chris. Okay.
Your guy.
To show
it's irrelevant.
To really show his appreciation for the moment, Chris just didn't show up to the show today.
So. Just get prepared for future episodes.
Yes.
To paraphrase one of the Trump staffers, it's irrelevant now because he's no longer with the podcast. Yeah.
Okay, well there you go. But anyway, that was the announcement. We will keep doing it every week. So ultimately, you may have to find a different way to subscribe once.
Maybe. We'll see.
We'll
have plenty of details.
Yeah. Just keep following on Twitter.
And again, if you do have to subscribe a different way, we will put something up on this channel right now to tell you that you have to subscribe to something different.
Hard.
Or you'll just hear the new episodes and then everything will be, you know, all's well in the world.
Yep. So let's get to the playoffs. And the game from last night, Winnipeg and Vegas. Vegas now up 2-1 in the series.
It's good to be Marc Chessault, isn't it? He's living his best life at the moment, isn't
he? Yeah,
so is Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
Really worked out pretty well for the two of them.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So what do we want to address there first? Marc-Andre Fleury.
The saves on Mark Scheifele in the third period.
The greatest goaltender of all time.
And how about that duel, by the way? Because Mark Scheifele has 11 road goals now, which is an NHL playoff record. Just amazing. He is, in my opinion, has established himself as a truly elite franchise-level center now in these playoffs. He's been producing in the regular season anyway, but Winnipeg hadn't won a playoff game. They really hadn't been in the playoffs much until this season. But you really want to see if your best players can take it up another level in the postseason. That, to me, is the mark of true greatness, and Scheifele's been unbelievable in this postseason.
He really has, and that's the progression we wanted to see from him. Can, you know, because we talked about him mid-season when he was really on a hot streak. We said, do we think he's going to push that upper echelon of number one centers? Is he going to be a true number one center in the league? And the way he's performed so far in the postseason, I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion, but even as good as he's been, the best player on the ice continues to be the goaltender that can't perform in the playoffs, Marc-Andre Fleury.
Scheifele is – this is great. He basically flies in the face of everything Jamie believes in, because I remember writing a story on him for FanRag like 2 seasons ago at the start of the season about how every year in the league he's gotten better. He's the definition
he's
of
a linear
progression. So let's see. Okay, the first – 11, 12, 12, 13 didn't really play. 13, 14, 34 points. 14, 15, 49 points. 15-16, 61 points, 16-17, 82 points. So just continues to go up, goals, assists, points every year. Now, this year he only had 60 points, but he also only played in 60 games.
Well, he was hurt, so that's fine. Yeah.
I mean, I guess he's maxing out at a point per game and basically 30-ish goals per season and winning the Conn Smythe if Winnipeg wins the Stanley Cup.
Is he maxing 14 out? Goals now?
Yeah.
In the postseason?
Assuming Winnipeg, even if Winnipeg doesn't win the series, he's going to pass Crosby has like the most goals in a single playoff series in like the last 20 or season in the last 20 years, doesn't he? With 15 goals or since 2000,
Another note on that, since we're mentioning those things, Scheifele notched his ninth multi-point game of the postseason last night. He's the first player to do that in nine games since. This will make us all smile because it has references for every one of us. Danny Briere had 11 with Philadelphia, and Patrick Kane had 9 with Chicago, both in 2010 when they met each other in the Cup Finals. The record, Mario Lemieux, 14 times he did it when the Penguins won their first Stanley Cup in 1991.
I don't feel like Jamie has any reason to smile.
When Luke was a wee lad.
Yeah. I'm trying to find. Here we go. 11 road goals on 15 road shots. For Scheifele.
That's a pretty good percentage.
If you can shoot 73% in the NHL,
you'll be successful.
And really, what? I mean, two of those saves were ridiculous saves. They both should have been goals,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, should have been like a 90%.
Scheifele's been amazing. I mean, it's pretty clear as we go through. If Winnipeg wins the Cup, he wins the Conn Smythe. If Vegas wins the Cup, Fleury wins the Conn Smythe. We'll get to the East in a second. But we are at the point now where I would say of the three of us, as the season went on, I was probably the least optimistic about Vegas' chances of getting this far in the playoffs. Like, I figured they make the playoffs, maybe win a round or two, but not go to the Cup. But they also really haven't, like, shocked me the way they've shocked a lot of people. If they beat Winnipeg, they are shocking me.
Yeah, that it's just the way they've been playing, because you lose game one, and you went, you know, this is not a team that's had to face, once the season got off to the great start it got off to, it's not a team that had to face a lot of adversity.
Nope.
They haven't been overcoming a lot of odds there. And we talked about how we thought they could get out of the Pacific just partly because of how good Vegas has been, and partly because we're not all that enthused about the other teams in the Pacific Division this year. Winnipeg's a really, really good hockey team. They beat maybe the best team in hockey in the regular season that we thought, just overall talent-wise.
I think Winnipeg might be the best team.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That team beat Nashville. And Vegas gets down into game three, and they're still fighting back.
Like, to start the series, they were down 3-0, 7.5 minutes into game one.
Yeah.
I mean, that looked like, okay, this is Winnipeg. They're going to steamroll everybody the rest of the way. And
now Winnipeg is facing its first series deficit of the postseason. And this is, I mean, we talked about this, but when you play in Vegas, this narrative sort of goes out the window because Winnipeg hadn't been here before. They hadn't done this, but now they're playing a team that
literally
has never been
there before.
But if you know, and we talked about the home ice advantage that Vegas enjoys in that building, which, by the way, how about the pregame ceremony yesterday? So Vegas. What can they do to top it?
If they make it to the Stanley Cup, what is the pregame going to be like for the first
game?
It's
going to be like Cirque du Soleil over ice.
The players will have to learn Cirque du Soleil routines.
We're all going to get sick on the same day. This happens to be right before game one of the Stanley Cup final. I guess actually probably game Do they have a better record than the Caps?
Yeah,
I can't remember what the regular season standing was.
I'm not ready to write Tampa Bay off yet, but we'll
get there in a second. But clearly they would be on the road for Tampa Bay. Yeah. So
finished.
This is really not important.
A better record than Washington.
Okay, so it'll be game one in that scenario.
Ice in the Cup.
Wow.
I'm not ready to write Tampa. We'll get to Tampa in a minute, but
Capitals getting shut out in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup to an expansion team. Oh boy,
if Vegas wins the next game. I just don't see him blowing it at that point.
No.
I don't see him losing three straight games. And then we're talking about the Golden Knights in the Cup final. We're talking about Canada's
worst nightmare
stretching to 25 years, which, you know, you look at the flip side of that. At least Vegas's Cup drought will end at zero seasons.
Yes.
End at 8 months.
Yeah.
That would be Canada's worst nightmare if their team, probably their best chance at winning a cup in the last 15 years gets knocked out by an expansion team from Las Vegas.
Right, exactly. it's the ultimate insult to Canada.
I'm almost sad there's not, like, Toronto's not going to be a potential option for the Stanley Cup final. Because I'm going to knock out Winnipeg and then Toronto.
Just go right
would
through
be just
them.
The greatest.
I almost want, like, if that happens, I almost want Trump to send Trudeau some kind of just obnoxious message.
That'll probably happen. Either way, it doesn't matter what goes on in this series. So I guess a couple things. Craig just sort of – you sort of alluded to one of them. If Vegas wins game four and goes up 3-1, I guess it depends on how you look at the series. I think Winnipeg's more than capable of winning three straight games.
Sure. I just find it unlikely that either of these teams is going to win three straight against the other team.
That's the thing. I don't see Vegas losing three straight games.
Yeah, it's that they're both capable of winning three in a row. I just don't think they will.
Yeah.
Because the other teams are really good.
Our poll question
two from... they're really good. Aside from two of the three best teams in hockey.
Yeah.
The way they've played recently.
The poll question we had last week was which factors played the biggest role in the Golden Knights' unprecedented success this season.
I'm curious to see. Well, what won that?
Okay, so the options were stable ownership, basically, with Bill Foley. Surprise breakout players, Gerard Gallant, and expansion draft rules. And there were quite a few people that were upset if anybody voted for expansion draft rules.
I would have been upset with that, because that's wrong.
Actually finished second at 29%.
It's just incorrect.
I would have voted for Gallant, and I did. That's 23%. But surprise breakout players won with
23%. Okay, because I think you're looking at different levels. Like, surprise breakout players is just
like the entire roster?
Yeah, the immediate on-ice success. Gallant, the system success. Bill Foley's more big-picture franchise success beyond that. But expansion draft rules is just wrong.
When they win,
it's not.
Sorry, you're wrong.
Like, look, trust me. I big fan of my family. All right, big fan of them. We had a family dinner on Tuesday, and the topic of Vegas came up. They're all big hockey fans. That's why I got into hockey.
Family dinner on Tuesday. Are you Italian now?
Yeah, close enough. But okay. And the topic came up that Vegas winning the cup would be bad for the league. And then immediately followed by that they're going to have to change the rules for the expansion draft so Seattle doesn't get as good of a team.
I try not
to explode.
Anybody in your family an NHL GM?
No.
Okay. Because I think some of them probably agree with that last point.
You know what? It's a good CYA move if you're a GM to blame the league's rules. But if you actually truly, like looking at yourself in the mirror, believe that.
Or do any analysis.
Yeah. Like if you actually truly believe that and you're inside the NHL, that's scary to me.
I want
to
talk about this in more of a big picture thing. I don't know if you guys saw Jeremy Jacobs' interview the other day. He talked about a whole list of things.
He had a couple things to say.
Yeah, the NHL doesn't care about Quebec.
Yeah.
There's no chance they're getting a team. He kind of knows. So.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of influence.
We kind of all knew anyway, but
Quebec, was this close LOL. To saying Quebec LOL, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Really, if he knew what LOL stood for, he might have
been the headline of the interview with Quebec, colon LOL.
Oh, boy.
But here's the thing. If you're the league and you're looking for sources of revenue, new sources of revenue, expansion's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
How about you pitch to those expansion teams, okay, you pony up. Well, it's going to be like $650 million for Seattle, which gets divvied among the other owners. That's a really nice payday. But in return for that, we're going to give you a team that can immediately contend for
a
Stanley
Cup. That's a selling point now.
That's a really good selling point for Seattle and Houston.
And that's why big thing I say, one of the auxiliary reasons why Vegas winning the Cup would actually be good for the league, because you want it. And especially if you're a fan of a small market team, you know, we have a lot of people that are listening to us from Phoenix. Getting a eight-figure paycheck just off the top by literally not doing anything, by existing as an owner
for
in the league.
The league.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not
big
bad.
Big picture.
I like what Craig has here in the show notes. Just simply, why relocate when you can charge $650 million?
I have a lot of questions.
That solves a lot of problems.
Seriously, I mean, it's just so simple when you break it down to that.
But we've been saying that for
money.
5 years.
We have. Anyway, but I got off track a little bit with Houston when I was looking at Houston. I was like, okay, this could be a relocation for the Coyotes. Why on earth would the NHL do that?
By the way, that's 20.
Especially now,
$21 million per team.
By the time they get to Houston, it'll probably be $750 million.
So
you get $750 million to add a new team.
Teams could have almost $50 million just handed to them.
Keep expanding.
By the way, oh yeah, and if you include Vegas, you know, it's like $60-65 million in a 10-year span just for existing in the league.
Yes. What's the limit, though? How far can you expand before you are?
You have to weigh that, absolutely. Well, I mean, in markets come into play too. Which markets can actually support it, right?
Yeah, where ownership can come in with that kind of money.
You care
off the
about
top.
That too, but these two markets we're talking about certainly, and again, that imbalances the league. If we're adding Houston, that makes 33. So you have to identify one more. But I'm guessing there's another market out there. I don't. You know, we've talked about the European thing, and that's possibly down the road, that's expansion. But could you put another team in the Toronto area? Sure, you could.
You could, and whether the Leafs will, quote-unquote, allow it.
Maybe a second
story.
Team in Vegas if this continues.
Right.
Henderson? Reno?
I feel like when we do this poll,
let's not do it enough.
A year from now, Bill Foley might win when Vegas has won their second cup in a row, but this time it's with Erik Karlsson and John Tavares, then I think ownership will be higher on the list. Who has anybody on this team not surprised? Like, I'm not surprised by Marchessault. This is kind of what he was.
He's been this player. That was just what I was saying, didn't want to pay him.
When people talk about the expansion rules being the advantage, no, I think if you want to change the rules again, just keep Vinny Viola out of the mix, and then you might solve that problem.
But that wasn't even so much expansion rules as it was they just refused to pay anybody.
I need to go back and find. But
they didn't
episode.
Have to give up Marchessault.
He wasn't making any money either.
They decided that they didn't want to pay him in his next contract, so they don't. Riley Smith, they didn't have to get rid of Riley. I mean, like, they didn't have to do that.
Florida we did, like, 10 minutes on Pittsburgh this show had to get about rid of Jonathan Marchessault, like, at the expansion draft. We were like, why are they going to allow this to happen?
Because that's the difference. Like, Pittsburgh had to get rid of Fleury. They didn't have a choice. It was Fleury or Murray. They didn't have a choice.
If they had talked about trading him. I don't know if that was ever broached. You might know that better than I do. I don't remember.
Fleury?
Yeah.
What if he had to prove it? Doesn't he have a no move? Or a no trade?
I think there was at least a...
Although they kind of needed him.
But yeah.
Not run.
Yeah, so yeah they wouldn't have won the cup.
It's a good thing that they did not trade him.
But there was certainly – it was at least talked about. I know we talked about it here of like if you have to lose him, get something for him or whatever. But the Vegas run here has been remarkable. So let me ask you this. They're now 6 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup, which sounds absurd to say.
And could you imagine we would have said that we were sitting in that room? At the expansion draft at the T-Mobile Arena.
Fleury would laugh at us.
6 wins away as we're interviewing like Braden McNabb and Derek England.
Did you talk to Timo Polkinen?
No, he was not there for some reason.
Okay. You couldn't get to him. The crowd was too big. I will say, Jamie and I have said this a couple times, because that was, if you don't remember, the expansion draft was held at T-Mobile Arena during the awards show.
Yeah.
So all of the best players in the NHL were there. Fleury was the rock star that whole night. It's like everybody except us knew that he was going to lead the Golden Knights to Stanley Cup in the first year. If they win this, because at this point, if they take out Winnipeg, how can you pick against them if they're only 4 wins away and they've beaten Winnipeg?
I mean, Tampa Bay gets to the Cup final. They're still a really good team, and we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah,
where does this rank just among sports stories ever?
It's remarkable.
In terms of surprises, it's the biggest ever,
yes,
without a doubt. No question, not even close.
It's absolutely remarkable. Because, again, and everybody is looking back at this now and, like, this revisionist history about how good the team was and everything else. We looked at this team with players on it and went, they're going to be either the worst team in the league or I know Luke had them in the bottom 5 at least. Like, we all thought, even with the roster they constructed, this is going to be a bad team. Right. They can trade James Neal at the deadline. You know, maybe hopefully they re-sign a guy like Marchessault. Maybe William Karlsson can step up and be a 20-goal scorer. Like, that's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this team was just gifted, just a litany of all-stars. They've all of a sudden, like, oh, wow, the league really put them in a great position to succeed on the ice. They really didn't.
A couple more points on this series, by the way, from NHL Public Relations. When a conference finals or semifinal series is tied 1-1 since 1974-75, the winner of Game 3, Vegas last night, holds an all-time series record of 35-8.
Wow.
81.4% of the time they win the series.
I still
bad news for Jets fans. Bad news for Canada.
Game 5 is pivotal.
Yeah, Game 7 especially pivotal. I don't know what the numbers are.
100% of teams that win Game 7 usually go on to win the series.
It's hard for me to. You can't pick against Vegas though either. I still think Winnipeg is. If you made me pick right now, I think I'd probably still take Winnipeg.
They have to win the next game.
But yeah.
They're done.
I think the winner of the next game wins the series.
It's the
way. I'm just going to do that because I still think Winnipeg's a better team. So if they tie it up, I'm going to take a chance.
And that's not a knock on Vegas to say that.
No, Vegas is very good.
Like, my thought going, I was trying to explain this to a couple friends the other day that I've gotten a lot of people watching hockey in these playoffs that aren't hockey fans. So I should get something from the league. I don't know what that would be. Maybe NHL.com to work for me for once at some point when I type in the stats page.
I mean,
okay, no.
Can't be miracle workers.
My explanation for how a team could take out Winnipeg, I think Tampa is better and or at least even, and I think Pittsburgh.
Tampa can match firepower.
I thought Tampa and Pittsburgh could match up with Winnipeg well, and that's it. Vegas shouldn't match. This should be a terrible matchup for Vegas, and the fact that they've held the Jets to 3 goals total over the last 2 games, and really what now 4 goals since the 7:30 mark of the first period of the first game.
The way that they just suffocate teams.
Yeah, they do.
And Fleury cleans up the mess.
945 save percentage in the playoffs. Yeah. Batting 45. He's now, by the way, top 10 all-time in playoff wins.
Pretty cool stat. Okay. I mean, he might win his fourth Stanley Cup here in three weeks.
When he retires, he's going to have like a fascinating Hall of Fame case.
Too shy of Chris Osgood.
It's going to be a fascinating case.
One of the most overrated goalies in NHL history.
Yes.
If he has four Stanley Cups.
The key to along for the ride.
Yes, exactly.
He's the personification of along for the ride.
Like he's the that era's equivalent of Patrick Maroon.
If Fleury finishes his career with four Stanley Cups, though, like...
And one with an expansion franchise in their first season?
This would put him in the Hall of Fame. I think if he wins this year, he's automatically in the Hall of Fame.
Note on Jonathan Marchessault, too. 1 point shy of matching the NHL record for the most by a player in his team's first postseason appearance. I know that's a lot of qualifiers here.
But still.
But listen to the names here. Jude Drouin, who played for the Islanders, somehow had 18 points in 1975. I don't even remember that name. Igor Larionov had 18 in 96 with the Sharks. Only two players have scored more goals than Marchessault for a club making its first trip to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Dave Lowry, 10 in 96 for the Panthers, and Marian Gaborik had 9 in 2003 for the Wild. So a lot of records falling here.
Marian Gaborik was good that year.
Marian Gaborik was.
if we forget, but Marian Gaborik Wild era was very good.
There was a time when he would just score, have four goal games and whatever, and he was ridiculously fast. I don't know where to rank this. I mean, you can't rank it because it's such a broad topic, but
I think it's right up with Miracle on Ice. I do.
It's getting crazy.
In terms of upset, in terms of impact, obviously it's not in the same universe. But
global.
But in terms of just purely
what are the equivalents? Let's just limit this to the last 20 years that we've seen in other sports. There's never been an upset like this in the NFL unless you're going back to the Jets winning the Super Bowl, and it's one game. I mean, it's the biggest game, but
yeah,
you can do something crazy for a game. They've done something crazy for 8 months now if they win this thing.
That's the thing. There's nothing fluky about what they've done this year. I don't know if I'm still of the belief that there's a big step back for them next season, but
depending on who they sign.
Well, sure, if you sign two of the 10 best players in hockey, you'll be fine.
In the cap room.
You'll be fine.
Why wouldn't you go there?
There's nothing fluky.
Okay, I'm going to go sign with the Cup champs.
The Cup champs.
Plenty of cap space, and I get to live in Vegas.
Yeah.
What if they had gotten that deal done for Erik Karlsson at the deadline?
Oh, my God.
They don't need him.
Now, I don't know if you had to give up William Karlsson. Yeah, that's true. They don't have room for Erik Karlsson.
They might not need him. But it's remarkable. There's nothing fluky about what they've done.
No, they didn't sneak into the playoffs. It's not like they've had an easy path.
Yeah, they got hot for 2 months, and they snuck in. They've been good all year.
All right. The other series. Tampa Bay and Washington.
Yeah. Crazy start, huh?
Yeah.
Obviously, Tampa.
Who needs home ice?
Game, but jeez.
Who needs home ice anyway?
I didn't see this coming from the Caps, but let's face it. Backstrom's injury is hurting the Caps. It's almost like torture for their fans. They finally get past the Penguins, but you're playing without Nick Backstrom.
Yep.
We're still unclear if he's playing in game four, right?
Yeah. He's gonna have to play here at some point in the series, I think, for them to win. Craig put this note in the pre-show notes, and I agree. I mean, you guys will give me through the first two rounds, especially once they came back against Columbus. I was like, this is Washington's year to get
to go on a run. You've been much more optimistic about them than we have.
But
much more.
The whole basis for that was they're still a very talented team. They haven't really lost a whole lot from last year. Now the pressure's not on them. If they start the series up 2-0 against Tampa and the series becomes 2-2,
both those game on home ice.
Guess who the pressure's back on now? And you know what? To sort of advance that point too, that they have played, I think, better this year in the playoffs because the pressure hasn't been on them. What are they? They're 7-1 on the road in these playoffs. So there's no pressure when you're on the road and you're the Capitals and you're down 2-0 in the series to Columbus, and so people expect you to lose that. Then you're playing Pittsburgh, who people just assume you're going to lose to, and even Tampa. I mean, yeah. I picked Tampa over Washington.
I think just about everyone did.
I still do.
Do you really?
Yes.
I think Washington's going to win the series.
Well, I think it's on this game.
Yeah.
I think if Tampa wins this game, Tampa's winning the series.
What's the best Stanley Cup matchup possible right now?
In terms of just on-ice talent or in terms of what the NHL would want?
If Tampa-Winnipeg is the best Stanley Cup to watch.
Yes, Tampa-Winnipeg would be the best on-ice matchup to watch. But
you think?
I don't know. How many points do you in Vegas there?
Craig has a Vegas look.
Vegas is relentless. They're fast. Marc-Andre Fleury is fun to watch.
There's nothing that can go wrong in the West.
Now, I'll say this. They don't have that star power maybe that Winnipeg has with a Scheifele.
Sure, but I wonder if – and it's star power in Canada, but I wonder how many people know – Patrick Laine, but how many people know Mark Scheifele?
Wheeler,
nobody ever talks about. We joke about in the show all the time. I mean, the star power is you've got Stamkos – in Tampa, and you've got Ovechkin in Washington.
But once you talk about star power, I think you're taking a step away from what you're actually watching on the ice, and you're looking at storylines. And Vegas's storyline is bigger than any individual player in the NHL.
Correct. No, absolutely.
You're right. You can't go wrong in the West. That series is so much more compelling to me.
You might get – I mean, Canada, they'll watch anyway, but I think you might get more casual fans if Vegas is playing for a cup.
Yes.
Oh, you definitely –
Just for the storyline, because people will become Vegas fans for that, for the 2 weeks. They will decide that's the storyline that draws them in. That's what they're interested in. They'll be Vegas fans for 2 weeks.
I don't even like. I want to talk.
Which, by
about
the way,
the
is
East,
not a bad thing. No, you should want new fans to watch the game. You should want that. Don't chase new fans away. Hockey, all sports fans, but hockey fans in particular. And again, I don't live in the soccer universe, which I hear this happens there too. Really bad about chasing new fans away. Don't do that. Don't be that group.
I can't argue. It's not all of them, but
no, of course it's not all of them. It's always a small vocal minority, but don't chase new fans away.
Washington,
my hockey PSA for today,
and Tampa getting back to this.
The league does a good enough job of that on their own. They don't need the fans doing it too.
That's probably true. Washington has been impressive though. I can't determine who it is that's really making the difference. I know. I posted something on Twitter about how it was ridiculous the Capitals started the playoffs without Braden Holtby voluntarily, and that seemed to touch off some sort of Twitter war.
You're big fans of yours, Capitals Twitter.
For a while there, they were. Remember last show, I was reading tweets. People were like tweeting Ovechkin and saying, hey, Lapinski believed in the Capitals, and now I'm getting tweets about how Tom Wilson's great, which he isn't. But carry on.
Well, no, they did throw out some stats at you.
He's fine. He's a fine player when he plays hockey. I don't think I ever said he can't play hockey. I said he doesn't play hockey. Mm-hmm. And the way he plays 90% of the time is absolutely 100% a detriment to the league. That's not a debate. Yes, when you put him on a line with Alex Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom, he produces. As I would say, probably 100% of NHL players would produce. You could put a goalie on that line.
Alex Burrow spot next to the city. And it's like, I mean, that's it happens.
But that's what's frustrating about him. He's at least a decent player if he plays. He doesn't have to. It's the argument with Brad Marchand. Marchand doesn't have to toe the line and slew foot guys. And it's not the licking. It's the actual, headshots and that stuff.
It's not the licking.
It's not the licking. Craig just put his coffee down. He didn't even finish it.
It's not the
licking. Gonna take a sip.
But Marchand is also much more skilled than Tom Wilson.
Yes. He's a much better player.
Tom Wilson is fine. He'll get you 10 goals and 30 assists if he just plays hockey, maybe a little bit more depending what line he's on. He doesn't have to play the dirty game, but he definitely plays a dirty hockey game. Which is ironic when he got hit in the head. Was that game 3 by Strawman?
Yeah, asked for the league to review it.
I couldn't tell. I think Pete Blackburn was the guy that tweeted out. He tweeted out perfect. He's like, I can't tell if Tom Wilson is the most out-of-touch person in the world or the greatest troll in history. Because there's really no middle ground. Either he is completely clueless that he does that every other game, or
he's bought into it, so he's just going to actively troll.
Or it's a great joke. Yeah, I can't.
I'm just still shocked that we're sitting here in May talking about the Golden Knights potentially being a Stanley Cup team and one of the players from the NHL licking other players. It's been a hell of a season.
Yeah. Maybe that should be the poll question. What's the biggest surprise so far?
we can come up with that. Let's not give it away.
Okay.
We've got two strong contenders already.
All right. Well, I think Washington, still with a chance to win the Stanley Cup, is probably a surprise to people as well. You guys both think Tampa comes back and wins this series, though.
I didn't say that. I said it hinges on game 4. If Tampa wins this game, I think they win the series. And I think there's a good chance Tampa wins this game.
Yes.
The goal that Kucherov scored was a game 1. It didn't count. And my immediate reaction was, this is how Washington's going to win the cup. They're just not going to count goals that other teams score. Well, but then
that's also been a nice little storyline in this postseason, but just goals that just don't count.
Yeah, that's maybe something we should work on before the Stanley Cup.
But we were so worried about making sure that the league had more scoring, and now we're just actively – this was your point. We're just actively taking goals away.
Yeah, why not? But the Kucherov goal that didn't count, it didn't count for a good reason because Tampa Bay had 14 guys on the ice and they were all playing too. They weren't even kind of along the wall ready to change.
You got to bend the rules a little bit on the road to success.
But the goal was ridiculous. Ovechkin, for all the heat he takes every time his teams lose, has been really impressive in these playoffs. This has probably been his best playoffs ever. Not just because they're in the third round, but just the way he's played.
Yeah, he's been the star. I've noted there are 3 Russians in the top 10 in playoff scoring this year. It's funny how we got away from NHL GMs got away from drafting Russians for a very long time with the fear that they'd go back home, other than Steve Yzerman, who just continues to sign Russians or draft Russians. But
it's working out pretty well. He hasn't had any success at this
point. No. Is he a better GM than a player at this point? he's been a first ballot Hall of Fame player.
Really good as a GM. And again, a lot of it, as we talked about this on the show, just being active. Like, just, and I know it seems so basic, but trying things. I need a goaltender. I need to improve my blue line. And just doing something versus just sitting there and go, oh, there's nobody available for me. I guess I'll just sit on my hands, a lot of GMs do.
You can get creative. There's always, even if there's not a free agent available or a guy that's openly available at the deadline, then find a guy that's contract is up the next year
Try find low risk options
and draft well later in the draft, so you have all these extra pieces, which he has done. But to Craig's point, I mean, there was a stretch. How many years do you think that was? Like 5 or 6 years, where it was basically Washington would draft Russian players, Tampa, Dallas, and I remember St. Louis took Tarasenko like in the 20s 1 year. Players that shouldn't have been there where they were people were afraid they weren't going to play in the NHL. So there's, you know, it wasn't just for cosmetic reasons. People were worried you were drafting a player you weren't going to get. But that's such a huge advantage for those four teams, even though Dallas and St. Louis are doing nothing with it. Like, that's a pretty nice run there for Washington and Tampa. Who wins the Conn Smythe if Washington wins? It's got to be Ovechkin, right?
You mean sentimental value? I mean, because Kuznetsov's certainly in the running too. I don't know. Depends on how they get there, right?
That might be determined in the Cup final itself.
Who wins if Tampa wins it? They've been the most balanced of these teams that are remaining, really.
And that's kind of been their calling card in the postseason last few years too.
Yeah.
I mean, they had the one where a few years back with that triplets line was just far and away better than everybody else on the ice, but they have balanced scoring. It's a big reason why they're successful.
So we're either going to see Stamkos get his first cup, Ovechkin get his first cup, Canada get their first cup in 25 years, or
Vegas get their first cup.
Long-suffering Vegas get their first cup.
The streak will be over in Vegas.
Maybe that should be the poll question. What's the best story? Maybe we'll have two poll questions this week. Look at that.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, right. I don't want to set the bar too
high. Migrating the podcast, two poll questions. Jeez.
It's a lot.
Kill Chris.
Yeah, try hard.
Is it not the most natural hat trick thing ever that we made 149 episodes in the building? Didn't quite make it to 150.
I don't know. Round numbers.
Jamie deleted like three of them along the way. So
I don't know. Round numbers. What is 150?
It's overrated.
What do you celebrate at 150?
That's platinum, isn't it? If you're married for 150
years. I don't think. Okay. I don't think that's that.
It only happened in biblical times.
I was to say.
People live 700 years.
I know people who feel like they've been married for 150 years.
Is there something good about starting with a nice round number, like 150? Look at this in the negative sense. There's positive sense to this.
Also,
you've always been a glass half full guy.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. Glass half full guy.
A broken glass on the floor.
Broken glass where the water's running out.
Also, I'll be the one producing the show in the new studio, so I'm pretty sure they won't get deleted. And that pretty much guarantees.
I'm just making sure I'm going to clip that audio right there. Everyone remember what Luke just said.
Guarantees they will.
We'll see if we get episode 1.
Yeah.
50 out.
Do you want to talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson?
Well, I sort of think we should. It's kind of big news. A lot of people thought he was going to get traded. He still could get traded at the draft. Let me make that point right off the top, because I'm sure most of our listeners at this point, if they're following the NHL, know that the Coyotes are discussing an 8-year contract extension with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who has one more year left on his deal, but they can officially offer it and sign it on July 1st when you have 1 year left on the deal. But I think a lot of people thought that they weren't going to be able to pay him. They were going to move him at the draft because the contract demands would be too outrageous. Now, I'm not saying Oliver's going to sign this very deal. He may, you know, ask for another $500K. That may be where they settle. But one of the things that I would stress is this kind of shows the Coyotes' commitment to keeping Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And there has been nothing in John Chyka's track record that said otherwise. He brought his brother over here to play for Tucson. Yes. He signed Nicholas Chalmerson to be his, you know, perfect partner. That obviously didn't end up working out. Chalmerson played with someone else.
But it's still good, though, too.
And it's still a big influence on Oliver and in the locker room to have a fellow countryman that he's played with internationally. So a lot of things have been pointing to the Coyotes' commitment to bringing Oliver Ekman-Larsson back long term, but you get that national narrative they can't. And again, there are people poisoning the narrative out there for various reasons, saying they're not going to pay him. It's, you know, and they probably will be a cap floor team again, but this does show the Coyotes' commitment to at least trying to sign Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And if you're already at an offer of about what I think is about $8.2 million on average annual value, you're not far away from bringing him back, especially when you start factoring in cost of living differences in other cities. If you're talking about Canada, I mean, we already know that from the Stamkos story, how much extra it costs to go play in Canada, or, you know, in bigger markets in the U.S. where it's simply more expensive to live. When you look at it in real dollars in your pocket at the end of the day,
yes,
this is a very competitive offer and at least a great starting point.
And players do look at it like that. We talk in other sports, and it doesn't fully apply to Arizona, but we talk about like Texas and Florida and the state income tax and how much actually, them not having that, how much in addition you are putting in your pocket. But I think to Craig's point, the biggest thing to me was there was a lot of questions from outside of Arizona about are the Coyotes truly committed to it? Will they pony up to pay somebody like Oliver Ekman-Larsson? And, you know, on the reported numbers that Craig had in the story, that's about where you would expect Ekman-Larsson to sign for. I don't think he's a $10 million a year player.
I don't either. I think he could get nine, maybe nine, five somewhere else. Buffalo?
Like, I mean, there's that, you know, it's, I don't think Toronto can, they could afford it, but could they afford it cap-wise for what they're trying to do in the long term?
Well, I have the comps. I mean, if it's going to be eight, let's say it's 8.2. Let's just say it's, so here's the top.
He's the second highest paid defenseman in the league, I believe, if he gets that number, right?
Well, I mean.
You don't know what's going to happen with Carlson and Doughty down the road.
Carlson Doughty down the road. What's his peak?
Are you going by cap hit or actual salary?
Cap hit.
Okay, well, let me. Because Shea Weber's making $12 million this year.
His deal is all, because the Flyers made that disaster.
Brent Burns is making $10 million this year. But yeah, so as far as cap hit, Subban has a $9 million cap hit, and Brent Burns has an $8 million. And everybody else is below that. Victor Hedman, Shea Weber, Dustin Bufflin. So he would be second. Close. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Shea Weber got all his money up front. Shea Weber did okay for himself.
Carlson and Doughty signed their deals. He would be second in the NHL.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty fair. And
I think so.
And again, it's all about when you sign your deals, too.
Now, I've had it suggested also to me that well below he might value. Want, you know, true. He might want to get to nine because it's like an ego thing with athletes sometimes to get that number next to their name. You hope it's not that case. You hope that someone can do the analysis and say, what am I taking home in real dollars here? That's what matters here. Are you getting paid the same amount when taxes and everything else, cost of living, are factored in? You hope that's what's going to be looked at here. If this becomes an ego thing where I need the number next to me, well, that's a problem.
I don't see that from him.
I don't either. I hope that's not the case, but we'll see how the negotiations go. But like I said earlier, I just think that this is it's a good sign for the Coyotes that we're starting at this number. Or at least this is the first number that's, you know, made its way.
Yes, no, it's a great sign because it is market value. Whether they end up settling somewhere a little bit above it or whatever, a little below, probably not below. It's a good sign because, again, the questions from outside of the market were the Coyotes going to step up and show that they were going to make a serious commitment to Oliver Ekman-Larsson, whether or not he signed or not.
Can't tell you how many people told me that's not going to happen. They're not going to make him this kind of offer. Wrong again. Yeah.
Strip down every narrative of a team from Canada needs him more, or, you know, the Coyotes aren't going to try and pay him, or he had a bad start to the season. With that part, I mean, that's true.
Yep.
Just look at this honestly. He's the most important and best player on the Coyotes. If they're serious about actually getting better as opposed to just pushing their future off 2 or 3 years at a time and stringing fans along, they have to re-sign Oliver Ekman-Larsson. He is their best player, and it's not close. It's a great sign.
What happens, however, if Oliver does want 9.5 from the Coyotes? These aren't the Toronto Maple Leafs. You can't pay 9.5 if you're the Coyotes. It's just the reality of the finances here, right? They're going to be a cap floor team. They can't spend to the cap.
Yeah, I mean,
so you have to factor that in. And if it's the same money, why is that important then? That doesn't make sense to me. So if he goes and demands 9.5, well, we might have a problem there.
Yeah, but at that point, the Coyotes have tried. If they're really –
well,
they've
clearly already tried.
Yes. So the
ball is in Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Kevin Epps' court.
Even if, let's say, that does happen in the hypothetical world, then the Coyotes have to make a move and trade him. I know the end result's the same. Oliver Ekman-Larsson's not on your hockey team anymore in this hypothetical scenario. But I think the path to get there is different, and that's important. Because if there was just a blatant disregard for their willingness to spend money to keep the best player on your team,
yeah.
I think that that sends a whole different message than if, hey, we made a very competitive offer and it wasn't good enough.
Now, that said, if that scenario happens where the Coyotes go up to $8.5 million and Oliver wants $9.5 million and they just can't do it, then the narrative will just be, well, the Coyotes have no money and they didn't want to keep their best player and blah, sure, blah, blah.
Sure, but the narrative – the difference
but that won't
is
be what actually happens.
But again, the narrative outside of the NHL doesn't necessarily – I mean, it matters for PR-wise, but you don't want the narrative inside NHL circles to be they're not willing to spend money on their team or they're not willing to pay for their best players.
Yeah, and then John Chyka was
because then you're
back
never
going to
get free agents.
Well, exactly, but in reality, if they were to spend 8.5, or if he were to ask them to spend 9.5, the Coyotes would be spending a larger percentage of their cap on Oliver Ekman-Larsson than just about any other team would.
Yeah.
That wanted to acquire him.
Yeah,
and that's just the reality of the economics here.
On the non-economic side here, there's been this narrative I've seen around, and I'm not going to name any names, but there are people. There's a person that I work with somewhere along the line that believes in this narrative, that when they heard about it, I guess Oliver Ekman-Larsson doesn't really want to win. If he's going to re-sign with the Coyotes, he can go somewhere else. He can make more money. He can go to a contender.
Yeah, the Oilers. I had someone say he should come to the Oilers and try for a cup. One playoff berth in the last 11 years, bud.
Stanley Cup?
Have you not seen what your GM has done to that roster?
The Coyotes have had more playoff success than Edmonton in the last decade. So just let that sink in.
Since the random Oilers Cup run.
Yeah. So in the last decade, the Coyotes have been in the playoffs a couple times.
That's a scary thought.
Three times.
Are they?
Yeah.
Would you rather be the Coyotes right now or the Oilers? Like, I'd still rather be the team with Connor McDavid.
I'd still rather be the team with
Connor
McDavid.
No wiggle room now.
They're in trouble.
And no defense. If the Coyotes get this deal done, they have
even with the Coyotes, they're not on a level playing field.
That's,
Edmonton has a lot of advantages that Arizona does not have.
So let's get back to the I don't want to win thing.
Yes.
Okay, you need to go where you can't consider anything else in your life as a human being. You just have to go to the team that gives you the best chance to win. Oliver Ekman-Larsson wants to win, and he's been through a lot of hardship with the Coyotes trying to get there, and that's part of what's factoring into what his ultimate decision will be. Are these guys really moving forward? Is there really a chance here? But it's not the only thing. Is that the only thing that you – I mean, are you of a one-track mind when you make a decision on what you're going to do with your life?
I like how you put that, because that's fascinating to me that, yes, there's obviously the ability to win is a factor. But I don't know. I make life decisions about my career, my job, whatever it was I'm going to do based on a lot of factors. And just because somebody – let's say somebody offers me a job tomorrow – that says, I will pay you 10% more than you make now, but you're going to have to move to, I don't know, Sheboygan, Wisconsin. And you're going to be 3 hours away from any major city and all of this, and you have no family around there, you have no friends there, but you can make 10% more. Somebody went, and if I was explaining that, I don't think the initial reaction would be with, how do you not go to the place that's going to give you the most money? They go, oh, I understand why you might say that's not a significant enough difference for you to change your entire lifestyle.
The narrative,
we don't do that for athletes, though. We don't think that way for athletes.
No, because it's not coming from people that know the athlete. It's coming from people that think their team is the best, and so everybody should go to their team. That's what the narrative
part
is.
They're frustrated that, oh, he might be off the market now, and so they'll vent their anger with some stupid narrative.
It's – you know, when Shane Doan, when there was that talk a couple years ago about how he could tell the Coyotes, trade me at the deadline and send me to a team that's going to win the Cup – It's not identical, but it's similar in the sense of, well, how do you know who's going to win the Cup that year?
You don't.
So are you really going to give up everything Jamie just said for nothing that's guaranteed? You may go to that team and be knocked out of the playoffs in the first round and hate it.
The counter-argument is people would make is, well, he should at least be able to find a place where he can make the playoffs because the Coyotes haven't done that in six seasons.
But if we're talking about an eight-year deal
– yeah.
I mean, how many teams are you –
look at the standings from 8 years ago.
Yeah, how many teams
do you
know –
how many of those teams have been still in the postseason?
Are going to be good not just next year but 4 or 5 years from now, whereas the Coyotes might be. Like, I'm not saying the Coyotes are better than
Tampa. What happened to an 8-year deal with the Red Wings 7 years ago? Where would you have been the last few years? I mean,
you wouldn't be happy.
Again, you could say, look, you can go somewhere where you have a better chance to win right now. But like Craig said, there's a lot of things to factor in. You know, maybe – you know.
He likes living here.
He likes living
and
here.
It's
maybe
okay,
you know,
to factor that
guess
into
what?
Your decision.
He likes to go out and just play the True North Golf Course five times a week. You know,
I factored
what?
Into
fine.
My decision. Yes. I like
that's
living
fun.
Here.
Yeah, that's why a lot of people live in Phoenix.
It's okay to do that.
Yes.
It's so stupid to go with that narrative. We should only go where he wants to win, where he has the best chance to win, which, as you guys pointed out, you don't even know what that is.
Yes.
But there are other factors in life.
If you gave up everything at the start of last year to go play for Nashville, I guess Nashville probably would have been the favorites going into this past year. You'd be out in the second round. So, yes, you made the playoffs, but now you're out in the second round. Is it really that much different?
Clearly, you should have chosen Winnipeg or Las Vegas.
Yes.
A team that had never won a playoff game and a team
never
that didn't exist.
But, and again, it's whatever is – you have to lay it all out in percentages for you. What is most important for you? You might have someone that says, you know what? At this stage of my life, all I want to win. I will take less money. All I want to do is I want to be in a winning environment from a professional sports standpoint.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine too. There's just – you have to decide what is best for you in your life.
And it's a balance too, right?
Yes.
It's not just like – okay, here is my priority. It's a balance of all those things, the percentages, how they play against each other. But, and again, he loves living here. He does love his life in Arizona. I know that. But here's the other thing that you brought up that's really important in this whole narrative. He played with Shane Doan. He saw what Shane Doan meant to this community, what Shane Doan sacrificed for this franchise. That influenced him. That
sure
influenced who he became as a hockey player. So there's a part of him that wants to do that too,
and there's
to be loyal to the Coyotes.
And part of it, there's a legacy builder. And I talked about this, and we talked about this with Vegas and the ability of like, if what is the appeal? Not we didn't. The appeal is going to be the Knights going to win the Cup. But when we thought they would just be a playoff team, what's the appeal of going to Vegas next offseason? That you can be the franchise. That you are the face of the franchise. You are building something, and that has value to people too. That you can actually be everything. That the franchise is you, and you are the franchise. That's a very valuable opportunity. Also, look at what's happening in Toronto with Austin Matthews. One mad playoff run, and they're already down his throat.
Oh, but Mike Babcock visited him in Arizona, saw his home.
But
like,
some
his drawings when he was 3 years old.
No,
that's all good.
His drawings.
But some players don't
want to
deal.
Everything.
But some players don't want to deal with that. Yes, if you like in baseball. Yes, right now, if you go to the New York Yankees, you have the best opportunity to make the most money and to win World Series. But they booed Giancarlo Stanton out of the building 3 games into the season, a multi-time All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to? Is that going to be something you want to deal with? Maybe it's not. Maybe that doesn't matter if they pay you $1 million extra. I don't want to live that life.
And you know what I love about that angle is people will spin it from one side of that coin and say, well, we can't handle the pressure. Maybe it sucks living where you guys act like that as fans too. Maybe that's not so cool.
Maybe
you're just jerks.
Just be open to the fact that that environment appeals to some players, but
and
it doesn't
others.
Appeal
and
to 100% of the players. And it would be different if he got drafted by Toronto and that was what he's known as
whole
career.
Or if he grew up in Toronto. If he grew up in Toronto and he watched the Leafs all his life, he may have had a vision. I want to be the guy that scores the game-winning cups for the Leaf in the Stanley Cup final.
He's
and you
also
know what? That's a powerful thing, but not everybody wants that.
He's been a part of this for the Coyotes now for the last however many years. Mm-hmm. And he was on the team in 2012 when they made the Western Conference Finals, but he's been here for the lean years. And I know if you just look at the standings, you don't look at anything else, you see a team that finished with the third worst record in the NHL. But they're definitely – there's a real possibility that they are a playoff contender within the next year or two. I think if they're
there's
not a contender within the next 2 years.
There's a path to contention.
So if
things
you're
have
Oliver,
to happen.
But one of those things that has to happen is Oliver has to stay here.
Yes.
But do you really want to leave right when the team is getting good after you've put all this in just to go somewhere else you might not want to be, maybe as they're getting bad?
You know, and what agents will do in these situations is they'll point to the Coyotes' instability with the arena and ownership. And the ownership is a bigger factor to me. But if they're willing to pay you, first of all, you've got a place to play. You're getting your paycheck. I think when agents talk about that stuff, I think it's leverage more than reality.
It's like negative recruiting.
It comes down to what they're going to pay me in the end. If I'm getting my paycheck, I don't care.
Unless there's an actual rift between you and the general manager,
right.
You the coach, you and the owner.
And they're still playing. There's an arena that they're playing
in.
So it's not like they don't have a home. I think that stuff gets blown up too much.
Yeah. And it's a nice arena too. Again, it's in the wrong part of town, but it's a nice arena. It's not like he's playing where the A's play. Well, you have to worry about the sewage backing up into your locker room. All right, the facilities are nice, and again,
you practice
half the time in Scottsdale anyway.
If a team ever relocates, it's not like all the players lose their jobs instantly.
Yes. Okay, well, we're in a new city. Okay,
yeah. Which is what would happen if you had signed somewhere else anyway.
If you don't like to be there,
thank you.
And if you don't like to be there, you go, hey John, trade me.
Few other criticisms. But have you seen the OEL is overrated narrative out there too?
I've heard it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, he had a bad start to the season, and from a production standpoint, when you look at it, well, he's had 2 20-plus goal seasons, which is insane. You know, not a lot of defensemen can say that, and he's had more than, I think, 12 goals in His last six full seasons.
Does he have more game-winning goals than any defenseman in the last 5 or 6 years or whatever? So
those are good stats. But when you can look at the start of his year last year. He was not a good player at the start of last season.
Learning
but
a new system.
Toward the end of the last season, he was an elite defenseman. And the other factor here, when people start looking at his point production, who's around him?
Yes. And again, you have the defensemen in particular. You really have to watch what they're doing. Like, you really have to watch them. Because, I mean, what did Brent Burns do for the first two-thirds of the season?
But like, nothing. He had a goal for, like, the first 2 months.
Yeah. When you're on – especially when you're a defenseman, when you're on a bad team, which they were for the first 2 or 3 months, they were a bad team. There's nothing you can do on the stat sheet that's going to make it look good.
He's been borderline great on bad teams in the past. Yes. He was bad at the start of this year, but they were playing a new system that will expose your defense with a bunch of forwards that weren't playing defense and were turning the puck over.
Weren't playing defense and were very young.
So
trying to play defense but had no idea
where to be.
And turn the puck over a lot, which exposes your defense, especially your top defensive pairing. If he had been that way all year, then you can make the case to me. If you're going to make the argument to me that Oliver Ekman-Larsson is overrated – then you need to list off like 10 defensemen you'd rather have in the NHL, because I don't think you can do it. And if you can, Oliver's the 11th that you'd like. And at that point, it's personal preference.
Defenders are a lot like goaltenders at times, where they're going to have 10 or 15 game stretches where they look awful sometimes. That doesn't mean they're a bad player.
I'm just looking at the guys.
Like if you want 82 games,
look at his underlying numbers too over the second half of the season.
Yeah, people don't like to look at the underlying numbers.
Yeah, because that involves real analysis.
Because they can't do what goal scorers can do, where they can score 5 goals in 7 games and then disappear for 10 games and nobody notices because look, his goal scoring numbers are up. The defenseman can't do that.
Let's just run through some of these. I'm just going to go in order of cap hit, okay? And you tell me which. I'm going to give you a defenseman's name, and you tell me if you'd rather have them. Or
for
Oliver,
like one season close. Or like over the course of
going forward, starting next year. Okay. So we'll just go through a couple of these because I don't want the show to be 9 hours, but I'm just going to go in order of cap hit. PK Subban.
Am I talking as a reporter too?
No.
Yes, yeah, I would love to quote PK Subban every day of the year.
Yeah.
Please.
Love PK.
I mean, I think most people would lean Subban, but it's close. Yeah, we all paused.
Yeah, it's Subban, but it's getting closer. It's getting closer.
He's an Norris Trophy candidate every year.
Yeah.
But it is. It's you can at least have a conversation.
Yes, it's close.
Brent Burns.
At this point,
no,
I'll take it.
No, Brent Burns.
Okay.
Brent Burns 5 years ago, sure, but
yeah,
Victor Hedman.
I love Victor Hedman.
Yeah, Victor.
I love Victor Hedman.
Player.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got two defensemen right now. We take over Oliver in the entire NHL.
Which are elite players.
Shea Weber.
No.
It's not even close. Take Oliver for sure.
Yes.
Dustin Byfuglien.
No, I take Oliver.
How old is Byfuglien now?
33.
Yeah, no.
So you take Oliver over him.
Yep.
Ryan Suter, you take Oliver over.
Yep.
Aaron Ekblad.
Fascinating case. I can't make a compelling case to take him or to not take him. Like, I feel like that's
helpful.
That's the line.
Okay. So
there's such different
players.
We're
going to say there's a trade-off. We're going to say that and even? Just because Ekblad's
22? I mean, Ekblad's making less money. I mean, if you want to put in those other factors. But no, I would probably just...
His cap hit 7.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's still going to be close to a million less than...
But I'm just saying, money aside, you can have one of these defensemen as the
anchor
to your defense.
Larson.
Okay.
It's close because Aaron Ekblad is like 12 years old.
The final three in the top 10 are Chris Letang. You take Oliver.
Oliver.
Dion Phaneuf.
Oliver.
Take Oliver. And Drew Doughty. Probably take Doughty.
Yeah. You haven't even mentioned Erik Karlsson.
I'll take Erik Karlsson as well.
Yeah, yeah, Karlsson's further
but
down.
But
I mean, the other guys between them and
those
Karlsson.
Those are elite players.
Brent Seabrook.
I don't think Oliver Ekman-Larsson's.
By the way, that comparison was made. Somebody made a Brent Seabrook comparison with Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Was it Joel Quenneville?
That's
ridiculous.
I wanted to reach through the internet and slap the person. Are you kidding
that's
me?
That's ridiculous. But I think with this section,
I'm sorry, but I have intimate knowledge of Brent Seabrook's game.
Yes,
serious. That's no comparison to be made whatsoever, unless you're talking about a long contract. But
they both happen to be defensemen.
The other names before you get to Erik Karlsson are Mark Giordano and Kevin Shattenkirk.
No,
so
he's a top 10 defenseman.
So,
we've rattled off PK Subban. You'd rather have Victor Hedman. You'd rather have Drew Doughty, Erik Karlsson, and then Aaron Ekblad is maybe even.
So I think we've established that he's solidly at the top of tier two.
Yes.
There's a clear tier one.
But tier one is only like 4 players. It's
that's
not like
fine.
15.
No, but that's fine. That should be. I mean, that's the elite of the elite defensemen, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson is in that top of that second tier.
I'm trying to scroll down and see if there's anybody else that's not making as much.
I mean,
Dougie Hamilton.
I mean, Roman Josi we should talk about.
Yeah,
he's in the conversation. I'd probably take Josi in that case.
Yep.
You know, there are others that are.
I'd take Oliver over Dougie Hamilton, though. I'd like to have both.
Yes, I would as well.
So Dave Tippett wanted
both. Dave Tippett did.
They could have had both.
They could have had both.
But don't worry, they've got a third line center maybe.
I got a couple questions here before we wrap up. Smart guy. Okay, this one's from Michael. This is a local question, but just bear with us. Cardinals
got Rosen. We're going to be a more local show soon. So.
The Suns won the draft lottery. Does it mean the Coyotes win the draft lottery next year, or they get Tavares and or Erik Karlsson this year?
Well, okay.
Do we have a laugh track?
Yeah. Two parts. One, no. I think you should hope that they're not in contention to win the lottery.
But even if they have the 12th worst record, that gives you a good shot in the NHL.
Actually, I said they have a better chance. Where was Carolina? They were like
– they were playoff contender for 75% of the season.
Second last year, actually.
No, yeah. I don't think any of those things are happening.
That was quick.
Coach East Jack wrote in, if Oliver's named captain, I bet Delangit this year was a negotiating tool by Chaika and Tocchet to use for this offseason.
Read that again?
If Oliver's named captain, I bet Delangit this year was a negotiating tool by Chaika and Tocchet.
Oh, I doubt it. I think it would have been, honestly, probably the opposite. It was probably made things a lot harder.
Coming into a new team, not knowing what he had.
Yeah.
And assessing his personnel for 1 year, seeing who emerged as a leader. That's what he's doing. Yeah. And Oliver wasn't that guy early in the season. Oliver even told me, I wrote about this, that he thought Tocchet made the right decision because he didn't know what he was
doing. In retrospect. Yeah. Maybe not in October.
Yeah,
November.
It stung because he was hearing all summer that he was going to be captain.
We proclaimed him the captain.
Well, so did the GM. So did Shane Doan.
Yeah, and Shane Doan. You're hearing that, and then something happened. Rug is pulled out from under you. You understand why it stung, but I also think Oliver is this close to being the captain.
That was really where I was going with, I was going to spin his question forward into if he signs an 8-year deal, he's your captain.
Probably, and he proved it on other levels with Tocchet too. Yeah. Their relationship was in an entirely different place than it was at the start of the year.
I'm impressed by how those two pulled that together because it was not good to start the year. And a lot of that was just the unknown. Like Tocchet comes in here and how great OEL is, but he sees him twice a year over in Pittsburgh. And then OEL's not anywhere near great at the start of the year.
And Tocchet's trying to take care of so many other things, right? Well, you're a brand new coach and
on a young team.
On a young team.
A lot of guys that don't know how to play.
That's on the road for the first 2 months of the season and all the things that he faced. But he said, I got away from why I was brought here, to be that communicator, develop those relationships. He eventually did. And, of course, they also, sadly, had that bonding experience over both losing their moms.
Yeah.
And that.
But so that can bring you together.
He reached out to him and Tocchet said that meant something to him.
Yeah. Yeah, those two definitely worked at that relationship.
I think sometimes
they did.
I think sometimes we forget, and it goes back to the conversation we had about whether or not Ekman Larson wants to sign with Arizona or not. The human element of athletics of that. We think everybody is this robot player and robot coaches that this guy's a good coach, this guy's a good player. They should just get along, as if you just get along with everybody you've ever met just because they're good at their job.
Especially in, like you said, Craig, under the tough circumstances to start the year of, Oliver doesn't fit in that system early on and they're on the road for 90% of their games and the team was not good at all. Couple other questions here. We've got one from Joe and one from Jack that are both – they're both addressing the notion that John Chaika is on the hot seat. Mm. One of them tagged Ken Campbell in it, which is kind of cool.
So
And Jack even noted, is this the same media that would love to have him as the GM for their team? Joe pointed out, I'm paraphrasing these a little bit, his first sentence is, does the hockey world overuse result-based judgment when evaluating GMs?
You have to use the results. But you can't base it on a two-year window when you're just starting.
That's the difference.
That's the narrative that just blows my mind when I hear people saying, and even people say, they made some moves this offseason that made it clear they weren't just trying to rebuild. They were trying to accelerate the process. Yeah, they were when they got Derek Stepan. They were trying to accelerate the process, but they ran into a whole bunch of hurdles early in the season. But was Derek Stepan a failure here?
No, absolutely not.
When you look at John Chaika's moves, has he had failures?
Let's say Stepan and Ranta were
no.
Excellent. They were two best players last
year. Not named Ekman Larson.
For Anthony D'Angelo and a pick.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you need a center still.
You do.
Well,
I don't know if
were you going to get one in sevens?
Not that level, probably. But it was a success. That was a good trade. You can't look at that trade and say it was a bad trade.
There is a point where you have to be completely results-oriented, but you have to have a timeline.
But also, results-oriented can't just be wins, losses based on what – I'm not blaming Don Maloney either, but just past regimes have done. You also need to look at the results of the trades and the signings that John Chaika has made find me one where they've lost something.
And, oh, by the way, he's working with one of the tightest budgets, yes, if not the tightest budget in the NHL.
Look how he's built the defense in two offseasons.
Bingo.
And if he gets Oliver Ekman-Larsson re-signed,
your back end is entirely, yes, set.
Where would you put that defense against other defenses in the NHL? Like,
I think the way it played over the second half of the season, it's top five.
When healthy,
probably fourth or fifth, but top five.
If we're sitting here in May of 2020 and nothing has changed, it has failed.
That's different. Yeah.
But we're not in 2020 or 2021. Like, we're 2 years in. If nothing has changed, if nothing has improved by then yes, you say, even if we thought the process was working, something's not working, you need to change it up. But you can't look at it. Again, we talked about this. We cautioned everybody. This is a 3 to 5, probably closer to 5-year rebuild. And those bad teams that missed the playoffs weren't part of the rebuild. That was the descent.
Yep. That's the problem. People lump it all together. Oh, the Coyotes haven't missed it. John Chyka has been GM for 2 years.
Yeah.
The Coyotes have plenty of issues. Don't get me wrong. But I would put Chyka closer to GM of the year than firing him at this point. Now, I'm not saying he's one of the top 3 GM of the year candidates, but if you're going to give me the –
He's
31
is
spots,
not, and
he's
should
on
not
that.
Be
he's on. No. He's but closer
won,
to that
if
side.
If they won 5 more games early in the season and got to around 80 some points,
yeah,
people would be like, "Whoa, this team's on the move."
Right? And it's because of him.
Yes,
like look who he brought in. Yes. He's doing a good job.
And look, talk system over the second half of the season picked up some steam,
yes,
too.
Yes, it did. Question from Benny. We're getting a segment this week on reviewing a goal and having the review confirm goaltender interference, then the review of the review finding no goaltender interference, yeah?
Benny, here's my response to you. I'm confused, but that seems appropriate in this instance.
Craig's not confused by your question, I don't think. He's just confused by goaltender interference, yes, at this point.
As we all are.
Yeah, that was something special as well. I think those are the main questions. Yeah. Anything else here? Want to hit on GM of the year?
Yeah, there was a little bit of news. And speaking of, by the way, how is... Now that Toronto has a new and young GM in Kyle Dubois, how is the NHL media world, specifically north of the border, going to handle a young GM who hasn't served enough time or paid his dues?
Take some of the focus off Chyka.
It might. Or yeah, they might have to review the whole narrative because he's in Toronto. What do you do? Wait a minute. Wait, this kid.
Look, there's look. There's definitely a sense.
This was a good idea.
Yeah, now suddenly it's a smart idea.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And also, Toronto's the first team to ever do it, right?
Well,
right,
yeah,
that's it. Yeah. Trendsetting, yeah, Toronto. Trendsetting. With
I'm sure
young GM who's older than John Chyka.
Yes. Yes. There is a sense at some level. And again, it happens in any industry where you got the young whippersnapper that's coming in with different ideas or different ways of looking at the game. That is
so much of that in this.
Yeah.
League.
I mean, look, I mean,
there's
you can
so much resentment.
And it happens. Like, look, Brad Stevens
that's
in the NBA.
It's the only got perfect example.
His fellow coaches, 0 first place votes for Brad Stevens from his fellow coaches.
Probably the best coach in the NBA
so
right now.
That 0. That tells me it's like, yeah, we don't like what this kid's doing. He's making us look bad. Like,
yeah, and it's not that every coach doesn't like it, but for him to
like
get 0 votes, there
there's
had to
something
be
going on.
2 wins now away from the final?
Yes.
With their
two
best players missing?
Players hurt all season. I mean, they're missing one from about a quarter and a half into the season.
So the GM of the year finalists were announced, and I just wonder.
You don't want to talk about Sweet Lou, huh?
We can't
go into the Islanders.
Go ahead, talk about
Sweet
Lou.
We're still on that Toronto thing. I mean, well, what do you guys think of that idea, Lou Lamoriello going to the Islanders? I mean, before we knew this was planned that he was going to be sort of pushed aside. I can't even remember
excommunicated
who it was.
From.
I can't. Somebody had a great tweet yesterday into a like non-functioning senior yes. advisor role or
in a we'll pay you to stay home role.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically Cliff Fletcher with the Coyotes, right?
Which
in
is
charge of trades with Philadelphia.
Which is basically like being channeled over to the New York Islanders, which is especially if
and
they don't have John Tavares.
Maybe the Tavares-less Islanders.
Right.
Which I'm starting to think is more and more likely to happen at this point. It's
yeah, because now it's a month and a half
quiet.
Away.
Going to market
it's
now.
So
like, I mean,
quiet.
Come on. We're a month and a half away.
Also, that's a scary part, because what are the Islanders going to offer Tavares that the market can't?
There's not anything.
Like,
hey, we've got Lou Lamoriello. Is that going to sell John Tavares on staying the Islanders?
Maybe that's scary. Yeah.
He's also had a few months
Lou has
now.
Connections in profit.
That's true. He's also
funny. Everything that
maybe he's a sleeper cell and he's sending him to Toronto. He's going to go back.
All the reasons why people tried to say Oliver Ekman-Larsson wouldn't get a big contract in Arizona, all that stuff applies in reality to the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
And now
we don't know where they're going to play hockey.
Yeah,
they're not a strong playoff contender.
And he's an unrestricted free agent in a month and a half.
Yes.
They waited too long. The Coyotes are getting this done with Oliver a year and a month and a half.
My wild conspiracy theory.
I'm curious about what happens after
he signs. I say the Blackhawks try and trade him Jonathan Toews for John Tavares. Look, he's not coming back to you anyway. Sign him and we'll do this deal and you'll still have a number one center.
And Seabrook. So, hey. Pierce Seabrook.
You have to take Seabrook.
Nick Leddy and Seabrook.
You can't afford those two contracts, right? I mean, who can?
Yes. That would be crazy. All right. Can we get to the GM of the Year
final? Sorry about that.
I believe we all had Ray Shiro as the winner.
Yes.
As our pick.
Yes, he was.
He's not even a finalist.
Actually, that's probably.
We had two of the other guys on our list that, you know, everyone knew McPhee was going to be on this list. George McPhee.
Of course.
How can you not be? Because Vegas is where. Got to be on the list. Even though we can look back at the expansion draft and scratch our heads at a number of moves he made.
So is he going to win just because Vegas?
He might.
He might.
Okay.
And again, it's not like he's been bad.
He's been bad.
Eisenman's on this list.
I think there were missed opportunities.
And then
Eisenman always is on
the list. Kevin Chevalier.
I don't get that one at all.
I have no idea why he's on the list.
I don't get
that one. Can someone explain to me? Make an argument.
I can't.
He got Paul Stastny.
Yeah, but he also got Steve Mason.
Thank you. That's the counter. Subtract one from the other. And
you can't sign Steve Mason to a multi-year, $4+ million contract and win GM of the Year. You just cannot do it.
That team has drafted really well for years. But that award's not supposed to be from when they drafted Mark Scheifele.
If it's a lifetime achievement award, then give it to the Yzerman.
Well, Yzerman should win every year, probably. Like, so
I don't understand that one.
It feels like they just looked around and were like, these are three of the four teams that are left. I know that they voted earlier, but it's basically like three of the four finalists, as far as teams, their GMs get the
predictable
award.
Path.
And it not went, Washington.
You take the GM of the best team in the league, and then you take the two GMs of two teams that surprised you they were that good. That's what this is.
But Ray Shiro.
He should have been on
that. Jersey was terrible last year.
I wonder
year.
When this.
They drafted first.
And he
and he was more active.
Made the trade for Vatanen.
You got Johansson for nothing.
Yep. I mean, if you are going to look more than 1 year, he got Taylor Hall for nothing. He's
people
possibly
do, by
made the
way,
right pick.
Often look more than 1 year.
Yes.
They do.
By the way,
only
for GM,
year,
you should. You should look at least a couple
years.
Because
you can't judge it all in one season. I agree with you.
So maybe 2 years. GM of the last 2 years.
That strengthened Shiro even more.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you have to go back 5 or 6 years for these other – for Cheveldayoff at least. Not for McPhee. He wasn't on the team.
He got Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. Yes. He stole Marcus Johansson from Washington, by the way.
Yeah.
God.
Yes. And
he drafted Nico
Hischier. It looks like he made the right choice at number one when that wasn't the popular choice at number one.
He's
unlike Chiarelli's brilliance of taking McDavid number one, which nobody thought he was going to do.
I also love the Brian Boyle signing. I thought it was a character signing. Yeah. It was a good signing.
And he contributed, too. It wasn't just like a motivational thing.
I don't get how he's not on
New Jersey.
I don't get it.
He made New Jersey relevant.
He made New Jersey relevant again.
The team, maybe not the state.
Well, not the
state.
I'll
just say it for Jamie.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
I could see New York from here.
This is fun, guys.
So what's Houston's expansion team going to be named? Are they going to call them the Arrows? And when do they come online? What are we thinking?
What's Seattle, 2020?
Yeah.
So every 2 years? Are we spending now?
The 2022?
Until we get to
so they're not going to be the Houston 34? Flames? We've moved off that. No Houston Flames?
I can't
imagine. Unless they pay $650 million to relocate.
In Canada.
How about the Houston Oilers? Why not just troll the Oilers with the Houston Oilers? Have Warren Moon drop the puck at the first game or something?
You could readopt Arrows, although it's kind of a weird name. It doesn't really say anything about Houston. I don't know. Oilers,
I mean, neither is Golden Knights about Vegas, but...
You can't do Oilers.
I just watched a Golden Knight chop a flying jet in half last night in Vegas.
I will argue, though, that geologically that's not accurate.
you know what? On that note...
If we do have two poll questions, let's ask people to name the Houston expansion team when they come online in 2022.
So I got to come up with four suggestions for Houston?
We could come up with it.
The poll question is
What do we give Seattle? The Emeralds? The Kraken? What do we get? Where do we end up?
Metropolitans still.
Metropolitans?
That was their old name, right? Like 100 years ago?
Yeah.
The poll question is going to be, what is the most ridiculous storyline of these playoffs or the most unbelievable?
And there are a few.
Yeah, I need to word it correctly.
Okay.
Otherwise, Marshawn will just win. All right, that's going to do it for us. 149 episodes.
The last episode.
From this building.
In particular studio.
Yes.
But we will be doing a show next week.
We'll be back next week from the studios of Arizona Sports.
It'll be like a new start.
Yes.
Fresh.
Yeah, but you really won't notice if you're listening.
No, yeah, it's not a video podcast.
How's that for salesmanship?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. For Craig Morgan, for Jamie Eisner, not for Chris Schubert. I don't know where he is. I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.